first the freeze, then the blackouts. Now, Texans are struggling to pay for the surge in energy prices from the deadly winter storm.
Maybe a residential customer on a regular basis is paying like maybe 2 or 3 cents per kilowatt hour if they're exposed to wholesale prices. And then, you know, last week, with prices as high as they were, an average price might have been about, you know, $9 per kilowatt hour.
We'll talk about why residents have been left footing the bill and how markets are responding to Fed Chair Jerome Powell's Senate testimony today. Plus, Brooklyn Nets fans will be courtside tonight for the first time in nearly a year. What they had to do to get there. It's Thursday, February 23rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the central bank will hold interest rates near zero and continue asset purchases for some time. In testimony before the Senate Banking Committee today, he said progress on vaccination efforts and multiple rounds of fiscal stimulus are helping, but that the economic outlook still remains extraordinarily uncertain.
The economy is a long way from our employment and inflation goals, and it is likely to take some time for substantial further progress to be achieved. We will continue to clearly communicate our assessment of progress toward our goals well in advance of any change in the pace of purchases.
Inflation remains below the Fed's goal of 2%. Powell said inflation could be somewhat volatile over the next year and might rise due to the potential burst of spending as the economy strengthens. Major stock indexes rebounded and tech stocks regained earlier losses after Powell's speech. Our markets reporter Mike Wursthorn has more.
Bigger losses were averted after Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said inflation remains soft, tamping down fears of a policy shift by the central bank. Still, some investors say they are continuing to rotate out of technology stocks by taking the gains they earned there over the last year and putting that money into companies more tied to an eventual full reopening of the economy, suggesting major indexes face more volatility ahead.
The Nasdaq ended the day down 0.5%, and the Dow and the S&P 500 each closed up a fraction of a percent. Lawmakers are investigating security lapses during the January attack on the Capitol. In a Senate committee hearing today, former U.S. Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund blamed the breach in part on what he called intelligence failures by the federal government. He testified that agencies had indicated then-President Trump's January 6th rally would be similar to previous events held by his supporters.
No civilian law enforcement agency, to include the United States Capitol Police, is trained or equipped to repel an insurrection of thousands of individuals focused on breaching a building at all costs. I am extremely proud and appreciative of the Capitol Police officers, the Metropolitan Police Department, and the other law enforcement agencies that came to our assistance. A clear lack of accurate and complete intelligence across several federal agencies contributed to this event, and not poor planning by the United States Capitol Police.
Sund resigned after the riot. During questioning today, he said he hadn't seen an FBI report from January 5th that detailed specific threats, including calls for war for the next day. Sund said he only learned of the report this week. And consumer demand for home goods during the pandemic boosted earnings for Home Depot and Macy's. Macy's returned to profit in the fourth quarter after losing more than $4 billion in the first three quarters of the year. Home Depot saw a 25% revenue increase in the fourth quarter. The companies are keeping a close eye on the vaccine rollout, which they say could shift consumer spending in the second half of the year. Coming up after the break, why Texans are getting big bills for last week's energy crisis.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
President Biden says he's planning to visit Houston, Texas on Friday. The president signed a disaster declaration for the state on Saturday that now extends to over 100 counties. Texas is still grappling with the aftermath from a deadly winter storm that killed dozens of people and left millions of Texans without power, heat, and clean water, some for days. Now, as residents are trying to pick up the pieces, they're being hit again, this time with exorbitant energy bills. Catherine Blunt covers renewable energy and utilities for The Wall Street Journal. She joins me now from Houston. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, Catherine, energy costs have skyrocketed since the winter storm. Can you give us a sense of how much prices for electricity and natural gas have risen in Texas since the storm hit?
Sure, absolutely. So we did see natural gas prices really skyrocket. And the reason for that is because there was difficulty moving gas around the state. At the wellhead where the gas comes out of the ground, there's issues with freezing at the head of the pipeline, which, of course, you know, constrains supplies and other problems with that as well. And as for electricity in Texas, typically speaking, you know, wholesale power prices range between about $25 to $50 a megawatt hour. Last week, we saw them hover around $9,000 a megawatt hour, just for some perspective there. And of course, that has implications for everybody. That has implications for retail electricity providers who are buying power from power generators. And in some cases, it has big implications for customers, some of whom are exposed to major swings in market prices.
Right. Can you explain why Texas residents and business owners are now on the hook here? How did this happen?
So in the 90s, Texas deregulated its power market. And what that means is they basically took the old monopoly utility model and broke it up into parts. So there's companies that are responsible for generating power. There are the utilities that are responsible for moving the power from the generator to the customer. And then there are, you know, retail power marketers who essentially buy power on behalf of their residential customers or businesses. And so, you know, the three distinct functions that used to be left to the regulated monopoly have been parceled up, so to speak. And there are a number of different ways that customers and businesses can buy power in Texas's deregulated market. A lot of customers, most customers, as a matter of fact, have fixed price contracts with their retailers, so they're not really exposed to swings in prices. Though that risk is instead borne by the retail provider. You know, if wholesale prices go up a lot and they're selling power at a fixed price, you know, they have to eat the difference. But some customers have essentially agreed to take on some risk by buying power more or less on the wholesale market through their retailer. And on a regular basis, this means that they get very low prices. But, you know, the flip side of that is if you have an extended crisis, like we saw last week, they could be exposed to a huge skyward swing. So let's just kind of put that in perspective. Maybe a residential customer on a regular basis is paying like maybe 2 or 3 cents per kilowatt hour if they're exposed to wholesale prices. And then, you know, last week, with prices as high as they were, an average price might have been about, you know, $9 per kilowatt hour. So just, you know, think about that and how much that could drive a bill skyward.
These are enormous bills in some cases. What are you hearing from Texans about how they're hoping to handle these bills?
For Texans who maybe don't have quite as much, you know, discretionary income or have, you know, already faced extreme financial challenges as a result of this crisis, it's a big deal. You know, I'd written about a gentleman who saw his power bill go north of $1,000 for the month of February. And he was telling me, he's like, you know, this is, it's not a medical expense. It's not something that was, you know, something I could foresee. It's just this kind of this hulking thing that I'll have to deal with over the next few months. And certainly for other people, it's even worse, I'm sure, to, you know, have a multi-$1,000 bill when, you know, for so long you were paying probably less than $100 a month through your retailer. And, you know, the retailers are sympathetic to this. You know, I spoke to one who, that is essentially forgiving costs that are above and beyond the average from last week. And they just agreed to eat the costs because they don't feel the customers should have to bear, you know, that extraordinary financial risk that came out of these extraordinary circumstances. Everyone's kind of been pointing a finger at a company called Gritty, one of the first to go hard on marketing these variable rate contracts. And Gritty says that they're working with state regulators and state lawmakers to try to figure out how they can bring some relief to their customers. But, you know, as we write, the bill is just coming due and no one really knows exactly how it's going to be sorted out over the next few months.
And are they getting any help from the government?
Disaster relief, yes. At this point in time, though, in terms of helping pay the bills, that's not something that we've seen, though I'm sure it'll come up in conversation.
Catherine, what conversations are happening right now about preventing something like this from happening again?
Certainly already state lawmakers and regulators are trying to figure out the best course of action to help customers manage these costs going forward. But I think a big question is what they're going to be able to do. In the deregulated market, the point is that it's deregulated. And if they want to step in and try to offer some assistance or offer some other kind of guarantee, or even, you know, put some sort of restriction on the availability of variable rate contracts going forward, that's going to be difficult and potentially controversial because of the way the market is structured.
And for other states across the nation who are considering deregulating energy markets, what message is this sending, or what are we learning about the challenges of having a system like that?
So I think that there's a big picture question emerging here, and that is, how do you structure a competitive power market for the 21st century, in which we're changing the sorts of generation that we rely on with more wind and solar coming onto the grid? We've got the prospect of more extreme weather events. And in Texas, a market that functions well most of the time, the crisis last week proved to be an absolute catastrophe. And so other markets across the country don't have quite this level of deregulation. Texas is a very, very competitive market. But I'm sure that, regulators and grid operators everywhere are taking a look at the structures that they have in place to see if there's, they may consider additional safeguards to account for these sorts of risks.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Catherine Blunt. Catherine, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, nearly a year after the pandemic began, there are signs things are getting back to normal. When the Brooklyn Nets tip off against the Sacramento Kings at the Barclays Center tonight, they'll have fans cheering them on in person for the first time since March. But of course, there are caveats. The Barclays Center will be at just 10% capacity. Fans will be sitting 9 feet apart. Courtside seats will be further back. And everyone from NBA players to security guards will need to have tested negative for COVID-19. Our reporter Melanie West says that includes the 300 spectators.
Well, they're taking a lot of safety precautions, and it's all the typical things that you would guess. The masks are obligatory. Food can only be eaten in your seat with the people who you are attending the game with. You're not allowed to mill about the concourse or visit with other people in different areas of the arena. The most important step, however, is testing. And Madison Square Garden has worked out an arrangement with two companies to make sure that people can easily get a test before they come to the game. And of course, the test needs to be negative. Barclays has taken the extra step of mailing tests to fans at home so that they can very easily get the test. And then if, depending on when your test comes back, if it's between the 48 hours and 72 hours old, you would also get a rapid test when you enter the arena.
And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.